This is the Analog Members Special, and we are doing a Casey at the Cinema again. Mm-hmm. We have both watched Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, which is one of my favorite movies, and we'll find out why in a little bit. But before we begin, Casey, I'm sure that you will also agree and me extending my thanks to our Relay FM members, whether they give money to Analog, to Relay FM in general, or maybe to another show and they just wanted to check out what this was all about. We record these podcasts for you, and the idea that you are willing to give us money for them, even though they are free, is kind of a wonderful thing. So thank you so much for your support, and I hope that this show and any of the other bonus shows or any other benefits that you get as part of a Relay FM member give you more than enough enjoyment for your money. So thank you.
Yeah, definitely. It is an extraordinary thing that somebody would be willing to part with even a dollar of their money in order to hear me talk to a friend for a little while. And that's super cool, and I am super grateful. And yeah, even if you don't sponsor or you know, patronize or whatever the term we're looking for, if you don't give money to us, if you give money to any other Relay show, except Bonanza, I definitely appreciate it. And you are a good person for supporting all of the Relay shows except Bonanza. And I appreciate that you have chosen to spend your time with us tonight or today. Or this morning, depending on when you're listening.
I don't know why you have such a problem with Bonanza, but you know, we can just move across from that today.
Because I wanted to be the wedding guy, Mike. I wanted to be the world's greatest man.
You're the world's greatest man in my heart every day.
Oh, I see how it is. Sure I am.
So, this movie.
Yes.
Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. Yes. This movie came out in 2008. I saw it then in 2008. I saw this movie in the cinema. I saw the trailer for it and knew it would be a film for me. So I've made you watch this movie. Mm-hmm. And of course, I am very interested to find out what you think. I'm not feeling the same way that you do about Firefly, where, like, you know, whenever we do our Firefly episodes, you're always dying to know how I feel. Now, I'm not feeling like that, because the last time we did one of these, you destroyed my movie. So now, like, I honestly, like, if you don't like the movie, I'll be sad, but, like, I won't be as sad as I was with Shaun of the Dead, because I'm prepared to be disappointed, right?
Great.
So, like, if you don't like it, like, I'm ready to just talk about it anyway, right? So,
sure.
We'll see how you feel. I mean, I do hope you liked it, but I'm not on tenterhooks as I was the last time. So, Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. I want to set out why this movie is important to me.
I was going to ask you to do that, even if you wanted my opinion about it, but I would love an opening statement from you. I'd like to know why it's important, and I'd also like to know, to build on that, like, what was your world when you watched this? Like, obviously you weren't in high school, but just for the sake of conversation, like, were you in high school and you were chasing girls and that's why it was important to you? Like, where was Mike when this movie came out, and what was your world at that point?
Hey, you see, this is why it's interesting, Casey, because these two things are interlinked.
I had a feeling.
So Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist is not going to make any 100 movies of all time list. But it's one of my, it's one of the movies that is one of my favorites. It's a movie that I hold dear to my heart, right? Like, it is high on that list for me. It's important to me because when I watch it now, it reminds me of a certain time in my life. But when I watched this movie, it was showing me my life. So 2008, I was in my early 20s. And at that time in my life, music was everything to me. You know, I enjoy music. I still enjoy music. But at that point in my life, you know, between the ages of like 18 and 21, 22, music was so incredibly important to me. Spending nights in nightclubs and late nights with friends was a big part of my life. It was something that I really enjoyed. It was something that I looked forward to every weekend. And I was learning about myself, you know, of course, being young, young love was a thing, you know, like meeting someone and being infatuated with them, right? Like as you would be at the ages of 19 to 20. And honestly, at the point when I saw this movie, I was on the tail end of that part of my life and I knew it. So when I saw this movie, I knew that all of that was kind of coming to an end for me, which I was perfectly fine with. You know, I had spent my years doing these types of things, and I knew that now it was kind of towards the end, right? Like, and I was totally fine with that.
So that's interesting, because it sounds like it was simultaneously nostalgic, but also exactly where you were at that moment. You know what I mean? Because you kind of had a leg in both worlds.
I did. I really, really did. Like, it was a real kind of perfect mix for where I was at that time. Like, this movie came out on the day before my 21st birthday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I saw it, like, a week after that. So I had just turned 21 when this movie came out. So, yeah, it was pretty big for me, right? Like, at that point, like, 'cause it was, like, that was when I was putting the end to that chapter of my life.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of that. And it was very interesting to me in that way, right? Like, to think of it that way, to see myself in that way, like, that was really interesting. One of the other things that I just love about this movie, why it's something that I continue to happily watch, is it's a simple movie. There's no big deceit in this movie. Like, it's a romantic comedy, but there isn't, like, this moment of heartbreak that makes somebody sit in a room and cry for 2 weeks, right? There's none of that in this movie. Like, there are moments where there's, like, turnarounds, but they're not like, oh no, and now our lovers will never see each other again. Like, it's all very kind of simple, right? Like, there's, and also the movie ends with there kind of being no real requirement for a happily ever after.
Yeah.
Right? You don't necessarily feel like, I mean, you'd like to think that maybe they continue to see each other. You might think that they might continue to see each other for a while. You might think maybe they get married, but there's no requirement for any of it. Just like you going through this journey with them and them having this one night is kind of really all that it needs to be. It is a fun movie. So with all of that said, my opening statement, I'm interested to know what you think of it.
So I think I liked it.
Okay.
The problem I have with this movie is that I am way too freaking old to really have this movie hit me the way it hit you. So I watched this for the very first time last night. I am, as I sit here, 35 years old, and I remember feeling this way. Like, I remember being Michael Cera, just pining after a girl, you know, typically one that I had never been romantically involved with, but nevertheless pining after a girl, wanting so desperately for, you know, a girl's attention. And I remember what it's like to be in high school and feel those feelings, but they're so far removed from my day to day that I don't think I ever really got in the headspace that this movie required me to be in. So I liked it. I have problems with it. I have thoughts, but all in all, I liked it.
I mean, that'll do. I mean, honestly, I wasn't expecting much more, because this is a film that, as I've clearly outlined, I like for very personal reasons. It's not like Shaun of the Dead, I thought you were going to like because it is almost universally liked, right? Like, it is a cult. No, I'm not trying to be that guy. It's a cult movie which broke out and has become a hit over time, right? You know, we were talking about Baby Driver. Well, the reason Baby Driver exists is because Edgar Wright made Shaun of the Dead, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it started him on this path. So I'm just going to go through this and we can kind of talk about it as we go. And I've noted down some of my favorite parts of the movie and why. Like, so I really also, I mean, part of the main reason that I wanted to see this movie, as well as the music aspect, is that I was and am a big fan of Michael Cera and Kat Dennings. Like, I think that I've enjoyed all of the work of theirs that I've seen. So seeing the two of them in a movie together worked really well for me at the time. I was like, yeah, I want to see that. That looks interesting. And so it worked for me at the time, right? It still does now. Like, I still think that they're both great. I mean, I think they're both great. So the movie is also based on a book, which I have since read, and I really liked the book.
What? You read?
This was many years ago, Casey. Many, many years ago.
I was going to say, like, I'm not trying to be a turd. It's just I know that that is not something that you normally spend your time doing, so I'm quite surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the movie so much that I wanted to get more of it, and there is no sequel. There is no sequel of a story, but at least the book has more in it.
Right.
Right. It's longer, you know, so that there's just more details. So Nick, basically the conceit of the movie, if you haven't watched it, is that Nick of Nick and Nora is getting over a breakup. He's not doing a very good job of it. And Nora is in a friend group with Nick's ex. So the ex's name is Triss. And as part of Nick not doing a very good job of getting over Triss, he is making her mix CDs in which he's trying to profess his love for a song. And Nora has been listening to the CDs, not really paying too much attention of where they're coming from. Like, she just knows it's from an ex. But she keeps listening to the CDs because their music tastes match up so well.
Right, right.
Nick is also in a band with two gay guys, which is brilliant. It's just this really, like, just this thing that produces lots of comedy moments throughout the whole movie. But like, his two best friends are two gay guys. They're not in a relationship. They're just like the two guys. They're just friends. But they're in, they have band names that I don't even really want to repeat. But like they typically play on words, related to some kind of gay culture thing. But like, there's a lot of sex references into the band names, which is why I just don't really want to repeat them, 'cause they're quite lewd. And the whole movie is set around one night. This is just one night. And the reason that everybody is out that evening, like these two groups of friends, so you have Nora and her friend Caroline and Triss, who is... what's wrong with Caroline? You don't like Caroline's character?
Oh, my God. She is annoying from the moment she lands on screen, and she is annoying until the very end.
She's meant to be, though.
I know. I was just about to say, to be fair, she's meant to be, but... Oh,
and she's also the MacGuffin of this movie.
That's not true. That's slightly true. That is not true, and I have a note about that later, and I will read you that note verbatim, but carry on.
No. We're doing it now. We don't have to do this chronologically. Go on.
In my notes, I have the following line. This gum may be the world's worst MacGuffin.
Well, right. Okay, the gum. You're right. Okay,
Caroline is, truth be told, the actual MacGuffin. You are right to say that.
But the gum does keep finding its way around from person to person, right? But okay, so that's done just for the pure comedy of like what happens to the gum when she vomits and then she pulls the gum. So like later on in the movie, when Caroline is very drunk, she vomits. She pulls the gum out of the toilet, right, and puts it in her mouth. And then it keeps getting passed around from person to person via just varying circumstances to the point where it is like there all the way up until the end of the movie.
It's so gross. Oh my God.
It is disgusting, but it's also funny.
It was funny until the puke toilet thing like that. Just,
well, that's, no, but it's not, there's no joke to it before then.
I guess you're right. I don't know. It's
like, that is a disgusting scene, right? But it's, the reason that, like, I usually don't like, I don't like stuff like that, and you know, I don't like that, but it works for me in this movie because, I mean, that's part of being a drunk teenager, right? That you will vomit and that you'll do stupid stuff. And yeah, and like, the idea is just to show how drunk she is, that she, that's the decisions that she'll make. But yeah, everybody's out that evening, including Caroline and Nora and Nick and his friends, Tom and Dev, and Triss, who is taking a guy by the name of Gary out to the nightclub, a nightclub that evening, because everybody is trying to find a band called Where's Fluffy, who are playing a secret show in New York City that night. Where's Fluffy, Casey, don't exist, by the way. I don't know if that assumed. I mean, it's just, there is a lot of bands referenced in this movie that do all exist. except for Are You Randy and Where's Fluffy? They don't exist. And also Michael Cera's band. Although I actually think that they do have a song on the soundtrack. So like the song that they play, I think it's called Something That Man. It might be like Screw That Man or something like that. That is actually on the official soundtrack of the movie.
Michael Cera doesn't actually play bass, does he?
I believe he does, yeah, because he also does in Scott Pilgrim. And I know in Scott Pilgrim, I know they learned, because there are like three songs on the official soundtrack that are actually played by the actors of the movie. And I know that everybody else learned to play. So the lady who plays Kim Pine, she learns to play drums. And the guy who plays the other guy whose name I can't remember off the top of my head, he learns to play guitar and sings. Like, so yeah, Michael Cera does play the bass. I don't know if he'd learned for this movie or if he'd learned before or whatever, but he does know how to play bass.
Mini bio. Alongside acting, Cera is also a musician. He sings and plays guitar and bass. So there you go.
So they're all out that night. I mean, so Nick and Tom and Dev are playing a show in town before. And, you know, there's like another funny thing I like with like the drum machine, right? They don't have a drummer, so they get this like crappy drum machine.
Right.
And Caroline's super drunk in this bar. Nora sees Nick and kind of thinks he looks attractive. She doesn't know who he is. She just knows he's the guy who played bass in the band. And then this gets like to the point where Tris brings this guy. She gets a little bit jealous. There's like an altercation with Nora. Nora goes up to Nick and kisses him to try and pretend that they're seeing each other. And obviously this brings confusion to everyone. So Nick has no idea what's going on. Tris has no idea how the two of them know each other, right? Like it just is this whole confusion thing, but it begins the chain of events, right? So the reason that Caroline becomes the MacGuffin is because it is decided at this point that she's far too drunk and has to go home, and Nick says that he'll help. He has his car. He'll drive them. And then they bump into Nick's friends, and Nick's friends say that they'll take her because they want Nick and Nora to go off together because they hate Tris. They want Nick and Nora to be together, right? So this then kind of like they push the two of them together. They say they'll take Caroline, and then Nick and Nora go off on their own. They then lose Caroline. This is why Caroline becomes the MacGuffin, because she keeps pushing the story along in the different ways, and they all keep trying to go and find her. Because Nick and Nora have had a fight at this point, because Nora can tell that Nick is clearly not over Tris, and they kind of have a bit of an altercation, to the point where I think it's at this point in the movie where she punches him in the throat.
Something like, I remember the moment you're talking about, and I don't remember when it was. But also, by the way, the way you described this, and everything you've said is accurate, but I didn't think of it this way. This is kind of The Hangover, but for high schoolers and a year before The Hangover came out.
Yeah, because it's like all one night and there is a
missing person.
Hangover is a little bit different. Like it's like the next day. But yeah, I get what you mean. It's like there's like a missing person and they're trying to find them, right? And that's it. They're trying to find Caroline. That's how the story then goes. They've lost Caroline, and then they have to try and find Caroline. So everyone gets together and they're in a van and they're like driving all over town. They're searching for her. So Caroline is at a bus station. She doesn't have the money to get home, and then she does the vomiting thing. And it's funny like to see phones in this movie, right? So like this movie was probably shot before the iPhone was released.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously in 2008, most people didn't have iPhones, especially kids in school. So everyone has like flip phones. There's like a Motorola Razr, there's like a Samsung phone. Everyone has flip phones.
Yeah.
And it's just a real funny thing to see, right?
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, because what occurred to me as I was watching this was that the technology is clearly old, but it is not so ancient that it's striking and that it takes you out of the movie. You know, oh yeah, there's an old cell phone. Like, that makes sense. You know what I mean? It's
especially because they are using phones, right? Like they are using them. Like
right.
If this was a movie where there were no phones used, then it would be crazy. And honestly, even with a smartphone, that probably you wouldn't have been able to do anything different than what they did, right? Like, they wouldn't have been able to find her any differently. I think the only difference would have been was how information was being shared about the whereabouts of the secret gig, right? That would have been shared on social media as opposed to when they find out the information from the radio or whatever, right?
Yep.
But that's basically it.
Yeah, and additionally, like, he was burning mixed CDs, and it's not making a mixtape, because a mixtape is, like, so ridiculously old that it is off-putting. But a mixed CD, yeah, I mean, I remember doing that. That's, I mean, if
but
you're...
But iPods are in this movie, right? But it's just a way to share music. But yeah,
right.
Like, now it would be, like, a Spotify playlist.
Yeah, exactly. And to come back a half step, like, some of the things toward the beginning of the movie, like, the first mixed CD that really makes an appearance is Road to Closure, Volume 12.
which is pretty great, right? It's really clever. There's a lot of little things like that in the movie, which I enjoy.
Yeah, I also liked that, of course, Michael Cera drives a Yugo. Of course he does, because that is like the
most... Yeah, can you explain this a little bit to me?
So I don't know a lot about Yugos, although a girl I went to high school with had one, coincidentally. But Yugo is short for Yugoslavia, and it was basically an auto manufacturer that made one or not many models. And it was called a Yugo, Y-U-G-O, and they made it to the States, and they were pieces of garbage when they arrived, and they've been pieces of garbage ever since. And they weigh nothing, and they barely get out of their own way, and I don't think they were terribly expensive. And I never witnessed this happen, but the understanding I had is that the girl who I knew in high school who had the Yugo, it was not uncommon for her to... lose her car because a group of like 4 to 8 guys would just go to her car, pick it up, and move it to a different parking spot mess with her, because it just really was that light and crappy. You know, there's nothing to it. And so it's just like the most, it is the Michael Cera of cars. And, you know, I do like Michael Cera, but in this movie, it's Michael Cera playing Michael Cera, as with almost every other movie he's ever been in.
See, this frustrates me about Michael Cera, right? He's like, he is cast to be the guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, like, it frustrates me because he is in two of my favorite movies. And he is the person I would pick for both of the roles. And, like, that's what the casting directors have done too. Like, if you've read this book, or if you've read Scott Pilgrim, like, the roles are almost made for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like... He became famous for being George Michael in Arrested Development. Well, George Michael was neither of these characters. Right? Mm-hmm. And I totally get it, right? The idea of Michael Cera being Michael Cera. It is a thing. There is a Michael Cera type of movie. But, like, there are times where you can be typecast into the perfect role. And yeah. I think he was in both of these. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. So after the vomit phone gum thing, there's a little time-lapse-y type scenario set to a piece of music. Yeah, a montage. Cool. And the song is called After Hours by We Are Scientists. And I love this song. And it's perfect for this movie. Like, it's about being out late at night. And I love this song because it was a song I used to hear in nightclubs. Like, it was great, right? Like, and it really worked. And this part of the movie, there are other parts of this movie where, like, I feel like that this movie is almost like a love letter to music and New York City. Like,
yeah.
Both of those things. Because New York is portrayed so well in this movie without it being in your face. Because it's like, there's probably nowhere else in the world that this movie could be made.
Yeah, I would, like, agree with that.
It is requiring places to be open 24 hours a day, right? There is no, you know, I don't think there's anywhere else in the world that you could make this movie.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it was funny because one of the things that struck me about this, not until the end of the movie, was like, it's clear that it's like 4 or 5, 6 o'clock in the morning when they're finally like getting on the train to go home or whatever. And I couldn't help but think, what are these kids' parents doing? Like, where are the phone calls? Wondering where they are. Like, I'm such an old man. But, I mean, I grew up, I went to high school about an hour and a half to 2 hour train ride from Manhattan, which is not too dissimilar from the situation that these kids are in. And there were plenty of times that my parents were dumb enough to let me go into Manhattan all by myself with friends, you know, no quote unquote adult supervision. But man, we never stayed out until, you know, the next morning. Maybe it's just because I'm so straight edge and boring, but it was striking to me at the very end of the movie. Like, how did your parents not freak out this entire time?
Well, sometimes it's okay.
I guess so.
You know? So I want to just talk about a couple of my other favorite things in this movie, so we're not just going through the entire plot. Mm-hmm. So I'll just give you a quick round of things. I like that in this movie, Nora's character is left mostly a mystery until a few important pieces fall into play. Like, we find out that she has an ex and that her dad is somebody famous. And then we eventually come to learn that he's in the music industry and then eventually has a recording studio, which we'll get to in a little bit. But like, I like that she's almost left a mystery in parts until the information is needed to be given to us, which I quite like the way that they do that. Mm-hmm. There are two cameos in this movie which make me laugh. One is Seth Meyers, who is a late night TV show host now. He is a drunk guy who gets into Nick's car thinking it's a taxi.
which is a thing that happens mm-hmm. a lot, the getting in the taxi, like, or getting in the car thinking, oh, this is a taxi. Which one yep. of the things I wrote down in all caps, I would add, is who the crap would mistake this for a cab? Like, a Yugo looks nothing like
it's just because it's yellow.
I know, I understood the premise of the joke, but oh my goodness, I could not stand it.
Well, and you're also assuming these people can barely see, they're so drunk.
Fair, which is fair.
And Andy Samberg, who plays that a homeless
one,
man.
Mm-hmm, that one I caught immediately. Like, Seth Meyers, it's that guy. I can't place who he is. But Andy Samberg, immediately, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe Andy Samberg's here.
So I really like the moment when Triss has convinced Nick to give her a ride home. And then, like, she makes him pull over, and she gets out of the car, and she's, like, doing a sexy dance for him on the hood of the car, which is just a strange moment anyway.
It really is.
But, like, he just drives off. Let me try that again. Whoa. The New York sunk into me. He just drives off and leaves her because he realizes he doesn't want her. He wants Nora. And it's just this moment is just so funny where she's just left standing in the, like, by the harbor or whatever. Like, it's just funny. It's like this funny moment where he's like, ah, screw this, and he just leaves her.
Yeah, although what I want to know, and here again, this is me just not being able to get totally invested in the movie, how did she hear the music? Because all the windows were up, and a Yugo can only get but so loud. So I want to
know. Well, I can assume that considering he loves music so much, he may have had a pretty decent stereo put in the car.
Maybe.
And I assume that the Yugo maybe isn't that well protected in sound. And also, it doesn't matter whether she can hear the music. She's not doing it to dance to the music, right? And she knows how the song goes, so she doesn't need the music.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
The point of it is not for her to show, to bust out her great moves, right? That's not what she's attempted to do here.
Fair. That's fair.
So, I really like as well how they come back together. So like earlier in the movie, Nick had given Nora his jacket, right? And it's really just a thing that is, you could miss it if you didn't realize what was happening. But Nick uses a payphone to call his phone knowing it was in his jacket. And that's how they end up getting brought back together.
Yep. And that phone, quote unquote, message, because he's supposedly leaving a message for Nick, I believe. I forget exactly mm-hmm. what the conceit of the scene was, but basically whatever he says to Nora during that phone call is totally adorable, and I probably should have been like, ugh, gross, seriously, but no, I loved it.
No,
I
it's
it was
great.
Completely adorable.
He's like, he's leaving a message to himself,
right?
Like saying that he should apologize.
Yeah, it was really well done. I really thought it was funny.
So they make up, they share stories, they go on a drive, and then Nora takes Nick to a place which ends up being a recording studio.
Yeah, and by the way, on the way to the recording studio, Nora is driving his car, And it mm-hmm. wouldn't be me if I didn't point out one of my favorite lines for the movie where Nora says, "Aren't you impressed I drive stick like a pro," or something like that. I forget exactly how she phrases it. And I wrote next to that in my notes, "All this movie's sins are forgiven." Just like
the movie has no sins.
Right. Oh, my mistake. Well, had the movie had any sins, this is where they would be forgiven.
So they kiss and they get to know each other a little bit.
Yes, indeed.
Which it resolves something from earlier in the story, right? Mm-hmm. Like it is a payoff to something that is mentioned earlier on.
In more ways
and
than
then,
one.
Yes, exactly. And then they find Fluffy, the band, and everybody meets on the rooftop bar for kind of like the final part of the movie where like everyone's there. Triss is there. Nora's ex-boyfriend Tao is there. And then there's this like big altercation and Nick and Nora choose each other and they run off, right? They're not even interested in seeing the show because they just want to be together. And that's kind of where the movie ends. And what I like about this movie is we're kind of given some tidbits which would allow us to make up our own ending, right? Like they're both getting ready to go to college and Nora has mentioned that she has a choice, which is either to run her dad's studio or go to university. And the university that she wants to go to, Brown, is close to Nick's uni, which I believe he says is the Berklee College of Music. And they're like an hour away from each other. So we can come to believe, if we want to, that they stay together and they're just a short commute away and they live happily ever after, if you want to believe that. Which I do, by the way.
I also wanted to point out, since we're at the end of the movie, that another one of the lines that really, and maybe this is a testament to Kat Dennings and Michael Cera, but I should have been really grossed out by this line. Another like eye rolly, ugh, of course. But I absolutely love this line. And I think Nora said to Nick, you know, "Hey, are you sad we missed Where's Fluffy?" Because I guess they bailed right before they came on. Or you said we missed mm-hmm. Where's Fluffy, and you know Nick doesn't bat an eye, and he says we didn't miss it. This is it. And yeah. I'm probably getting the phrasing wrong, but basically he's
I think
saying,
she says, "Are you sad we missed it?" And he's like, "We didn't miss it. This is it."
Yeah. There you go. So I thought that line was awesome.
It's nice. And, I like it.
It's super cheesy, but it melted my cold old man heart. So I really enjoyed it.
I also like the sequence earlier in the movie between Dev and Nick, where he's talking about the Beatles song, "I Want to Hold Your Hand," which is their first single.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, other bands want to make it about sex or pain, but this is all that anybody really wants. And the Beatles understood that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's really the payoff to that, which is where we see a good shot of them holding hands later on, right? Like at the end of the movie, they take each other by the hand and run away, right? Mm-hmm. Like they run off and that's it. That's all anybody wants to do. They just want to hold hands.
Yeah.
I love this movie because it's so... it's so simple and nice, and there isn't really there isn't stress to this movie. You can just enjoy it, you know.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't affect me in any way other than nice. It makes me feel good. It reminds me of times that I enjoyed, but it also reminds me of why I don't feel the need to live those times anymore. It's like this little time capsule for me, which I enjoy. And it's nice to see that life of mine put into a film, you know, for as much as, you know, I wasn't in a band and et cetera, I didn't live in New York, but there are elements of this that speak to me really well. And it's one of my favorite movies. And I'm pleased that this time you didn't feel the need to poop all over it.
No, I didn't. You know, I think hearing you talk about this movie, I think in a lot of ways, this is your American Pie. American Pie is arguably a much worse movie on a general basis, but just
like
hear
a
me
million
out.
Different levels. But
hear
yeah.
me out. Hear me out. But American Pie was the movie for me. I think it came out like either my senior year of high school or like my freshman year of college. And so one way or another, I kind of had a leg in two worlds, right? Like I was sort of kind of in college, be it because I was about to go or be it because I just got there. And I didn't, you know, I was sort of kind of in high school either because I was there or either because I just left high school. And so because of that, I will always really love American Pie, even though on every realistic measure, it's a truly awful movie. And I don't even want to think about, you know, how the how the Casey of 2017 would reflect on, you know, all sorts of stuff in American Pie. And I think if it wasn't for the fact that it hit home at the exact right moment, I would probably hate that movie. But if I were to watch American Pie tomorrow, I bet I would love it almost as much as I did the first time I saw it, because it reminds me of a time in my life. It's a time in my life I don't want to go back to. It's a time in my life I'm glad is behind me. But it's a time in my life that at the moment I really enjoyed. And so I feel like, and this is not supposed to be a desecration of Nick and Nora at all. I feel like in a lot of ways, this is your version of that movie, you know, which is probably for the best because this movie is better. But you know what I mean? Like, it's that halfway, you're halfway moved on, but you're still kind of in that world. And it just hits home at that exact right moment. And forevermore, it's a time capsule, or it's a time machine, really. It's a DeLorean that takes you back to that moment.
I can't think of a better, like, way of summing up mine and your relationship with the idea of Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist being my movie and American Pie being your movie. Because these movies are nothing like each other except for the fact that they have men and women in them.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you know, true. I can't think of it really much more that ties these films together. And that maybe, was this before college? It was high school, right?
Yeah.
American Pie?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's like it, senior then, year high school.
And when did that come out?
Yeah, I think that might be it. I think that might be where those movies begin and end.
Okay, 99. So that was senior year of high school for me. 99. So I graduated high school in 2000. This came out basically the summer before my senior year. So this was, like I said, you know, I'm in high school, but I don't have much time left. I'm about to go to college. So it was like it was made for me, not because, you know, I was necessarily any of the characters in it, but it was like that time in my life, and that's what this movie was about. So it was a very similar thing in that regard.
There's just something so incredible to me that these are the movies that we've picked for this. Pleased that you found some enjoyment in this film. It makes me very happy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not expecting anybody really to take from this movie what I take from it. Like, I tried to set that out from the beginning. Like, I'm of no delusions here. Like, this is not ever going to be considered one of the great movies, but it's a movie that is just great for me.
Yeah, and I feel like I'd like to call out a handful of lines that I thought were really funny, because there were some really, truly funny one-liners in this movie, oftentimes said by Nick, but not always. If you haven't seen the movie, I will ruin a lot of good jokes by sharing these. So if you haven't seen it, maybe stop listening now. But no, I thought some of them were really funny. Actually, one of the bandmates decides to do like a impromptu makeover on Kat Dennings, on Nora. And and so they're talking about changing her from a sports bra to like an actual bra. And the line that cracked me up was, "Nikki is definitely worth the underwire," which I thought was hysterical.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, having never worn a brassiere in my life, my understanding is that having an underwire is kind of not fun. And so the line, "Nikki is definitely worth the underwire," I just thought was hysterical. Although with that in mind, who in the world would take some rando's bra and put it on? Like, come on, that's weird. But in any case, "I refuse to be the goodie bag to your pity party." That was actually Nora, I believe, when she was talking to Nick about Triss. I thought that was
before she punched him in the throat.
Yes, 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 yes. I thought that was really, really clever phrasing. And then there were just some funny jokes, like, you know, "You don't have to yell. You're not in a train station," as I think she was yelling at him, like, at the top of her lungs in this tiny little Yugo that's, you know, three cubic feet on the inside.
There are a lot of like little throwaway lines.
Exactly,
exactly. That are great.
Yeah,
like they are really great.
"I never wash my pants." Okay, whatever. "I like to keep."
I like
the
to
night
leave
on
the night on them. I don't think that's funny. I don't. That's not a joke to me.
Oh God, I think that's hysterical.
I get that, right? Like, I know that feeling.
Oh, I thought that was just a straight up joke. Oh, but I see what you're saying.
No, man, that is meant to be a cute thing. Like, that is meant to be a thing that, like, appeals to people, right? Yeah. Like, the idea of, like, I live for these nights, and I like to not forget these nights, so I leave the night on my jeans.
Interesting. In any case, those were the ones that I wrote down that I haven't already talked about, but I thought they were really funny. Yeah, I mean, I like the movie. I think had I watched it at the commensurate time in my life, I probably would have really liked the movie. I don't know that I ever would have liked it as much as you, and it was funny because...
I don't know. I mean, again, this is like... I don't think that this movie is made for you in the way that it's made for me. Like,
oh, I agree.
The way that I felt about music and the types of nightclubs that I would go to, I don't think that they are places that you would go to.
No.
Right?
I mean, so from time to time, but for the most part, you're entirely right.
But it is this like idea of this, you know, indie rock music, right, that I loved, which is what this movie is based in.
Mm-hmm.
Is why it fits so well for me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it was funny because Aaron and I watched this one together, and I don't remember if it was she who said it to me or me to her, but it took maybe 10 minutes before one of us said to the other, yep, this is a Mike movie.
It is a Mike movie. This is one of the most Mike movies, right? It really is.
I don't know how to put my finger... I don't know how to describe what a Mike movie is, but holy crap, this is one of them.
It most definitely is. Casey, thank you for coming to the cinema with me.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. And thanks again to all of our listeners who have spent even but a penny of their money to give it to us. I mean that genuinely. Like, that is unbelievable that you think your hard-earned cash is worth giving to us. So thank you from the bottom of both of our hearts.
Yep.
And we appreciate it that you sponsor any show on the network, even Bonanza. And we're so thankful that you have chosen to spend your time with us today. So thank you so much to all of the listeners. And we'll go back to our regularly scheduled programming after this.